I guess we'll get Sunday school started here. As always, I like to start in a word of prayer. Chuck. Oh, he's not even listening to me. Chuck. You're into reading something. Oh, it's my notes. Okay, so I'll give you grace for that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I was wondering if you'd be willing to pray for us to get us started this morning. Okay, so for the last couple weeks, I feel like we've hit the book of James with a very broad brush of just looking at the theological concepts that kind of override the entire book. Starting today and probably for the rest of our time of going through this book, I'm going to just pick the different specific topics that James talks about, and we'll just dig a little deeper. Today, as you can probably guess based on the notes I handed you, we're going to be focusing on James chapter 2, verses 1 through 13. Okay, so the most obvious thing about these verses as we'll read them is that they're about favoritism, or another way of saying that is they're about partiality or impartiality and the rightness of that or the wrongness of that. So in this context, what we're going to read about in James, the focus seems to be primarily on a money kind of aspect of it. And I am very intimately aware of this because I don't know how many of you guys know this, but the career I have that pays my bills, I am a credit manager. And so what that means is companies that want to come do business with my company, I get an application from them, giving me information about their financials. We do a financial analysis, and I ultimately will say, thumbs up to net 30 pay terms, meaning they can pay us 30 days after the invoice is paid, or nope, sorry, like you can pay as soon as the job's done, or sometimes we have to tell people, no, you pay up front just like everybody else. Anyways, so I see this in my job all the time, and here's why. If there's a young company that just started over, that's like 2 years old, they're doing well, but they're only like 2 years old, but they're not very big, those people, I probably would, at the end of the day, give them net 30. But I'm going to get a little bird chirping my ear. That bird is the owner of the company, by the way. He's going to say, keep a tight leash on that one. Watch that account closely. On the flip side, sometimes I get customers who are multi-million dollar companies that come, and I still require credit apps from them. And the message is oh so different. Oftentimes, it's a thumbs up, but it's with a net 45 and a net 60. And I'm getting a chirp in my ear, just fast track that, just sign off on that, don't bother doing a full review. What's the difference? Partiality. Favoritism. And why are they doing it? It's really simple. That company has $1 million, they're going to give us a lot of money to do a lot of floors. So there's an incentive to say, we want to do business with them. Let's make it as easy as possible. Paul, your job is to protect our company. Just forget about that for right now, and let's get that sale in. Very common. But the small company, they may give us great business in the long run, be great, but they don't know that right now. So they choose to have an attitude of, well, that's a high risk. So therefore, even though it might not actually be a high risk, but from their perspective, they're just looking at the dollar signs. Give you another one that's from my own life, one that you guys may not even realize, but I've actually heard about in different ways that I think is so weird. Celebrities. We all know celebrities. We have our favorites. We have some we don't like. But you know that most celebrities, if they go out to eat somewhere, they don't pay anything. Isn't that a little weird? They're all millionaires, and they don't pay a red cent half the time they go out to eat. Why? Because their restaurants want them to come in the door. Because if someone takes a picture of them walking into their establishment, they just made about 1,000 more sales than they would have otherwise. So it's a business decision. It's the same reason why you hear about like athletes get all their shoes free from Nike. I'm sure you've heard that, where athletes get their shoes free, right? Why are they getting that shoe free from Nike? Because Nike ends up making even far more money because they made that business transaction. They gave that one shoe free, and they can make a ton of money otherwise. So partiality is a big thing in the business world. I think it's a big thing in general, too. And so we're going to dive deep with that. I think if that's something that's ever present in our world, in a lot of different ways, I think it's a good thing to understand God's opinion on it. So what I want us to do is obviously just start by reading the passage, James chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Here's the thing I want you guys to try to do. It might be a little difficult, but I want you to try to do it. Imagine that James is speaking this to you, that you're the recipient of this. And think about that from that perspective. My brothers and sisters, believers in our glorious Lord Jesus must not show favoritism. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, "Here's a good seat for you," but say to the poor man, "You stand there," or "Sit on the floor by my feet," have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen, my dear brothers and sisters, has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor. It is not the rich who are exploiting you. Are they not the ones who are dragging you into court? Are they not the ones who are blaspheming the noble name of him to whom you belong? If you really keep the royal law found in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin and are convicted by the law as a lawbreaker. Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Okay, so I ask you guys to do your best to try and imagine you're the ones receiving this. And I ask you, how many of you struggle with envisioning you're the recipient of those words? Like, I do, I'll be honest. And part of the reason is probably, if we're honest, it's because we're thinking, I really don't show favoritism to others, right? Like, I do my absolute best to not do that. I know it's wrong. I don't do it. Here's the thing I want you to realize. The people James was writing to felt the exact same way. They weren't a bunch of heathens walking around saying, "I show favoritism all the time, and I know I'm disobeying God by doing it." They would have received it as the person who is essentially getting the slap on the back of the head from James saying, "Yo, hey, let me point something out to you." Okay? See, what James was trying to do, what he was writing to do, is to expose their blind spots. Right? He's not just giving them a new law or a command. He's trying to show them that they are missing the mark. They're not really seeing themselves and the situation as it really is. It's kind of like when you're in your car, right? You know, we all know you have a blind spot in your car as you're driving, where you can see to the side, and you can see behind you because you got the mirror, but that's that tiny little spot where you can't actually see unless you got that little extra mirror, right, that someone puts in there, and you're paying attention to both mirrors. That's called a blind spot, right? And we all have them in our lives, spiritual blind spots, of not seeing reality as it really is. So we're all like that car. And I'll go on to say, we kind of talked about last week, and at the end, the very end of James, James tells us about, he says, it's a good thing for you to help your brother, and I'm going to just use this phrase, see their blind spots, so that they can have an opportunity to make it right. Okay, so it's not just about James exposing blind spots. He actually encourages us to do that as well. And that's a hard thing because honestly, I think most of us feel really uncomfortable with number one, having someone exposing our blind spots, right? And number two, it's even equally hard doing it for someone else in a way that's loving and gentle. Okay, so before we go on, I do want to ask a question to get back to the whole concept of partiality, right? And the question I have is, why is it that partiality is not just wrong, but it's a sin? Why is partiality a sin? We know it is. The verse here says flat out that it is a sin. But I'm curious, when we peel back the onion and say, why is it that it is a sin? I'm curious how you guys would answer that. I'm sorry. Anna Jane.
I am the favorite. So, I think it's a sin because God tells us what is true, right? He tells us where we all stand in relation to each other and to Him. And when we show partiality, it's almost like what we're saying is, no, I get to decide.
I just give a blank there. In the verse here, he talks primarily about money, right? But I want to think about just the concept of partiality now, because does this, we're going to get into it here in another question here, but does the concept of having favoritism or partiality relate just to people with money or people who don't have money? No. Yeah, I'm seeing all the head shakes. We all know that there's all stripes of it. We'll come back to that. But just in general, why is partiality sin? Very good. So it's not the only reason I would say. Wait, go ahead, Lindsay. And I thought it was a powerful image that struck me because when we're talking about being impartial, I've realized in my own life something that for a long time I didn't understand was addiction and the struggle that people go through. And I think that it's an area where I have realized I need to grow because there's a lot more to addiction than just like the health of the people who are trying. Thank you. That's a great image. Others. There's plenty of other reasons we might be able to come up with. Why is partiality sin? And you don't have to just look at this verse. I mean, you could speak biblically, period, about why this is a why it's a sin.
Well, I don't know if I can explain what I'm trying to think here, but
Thank you. Very good point. I think I saw another hand. Yes. Yeah, I think back to my own example that I gave at the beginning. Like, I'm telling you stories about giving people credit. My bosses aren't saying fast track that person simply because they have money. They want to get fast track it because they have money that they want in their pocket. That's the missing link there. It's like, it's not the money itself, it's what it can do that gets someone. And you're dead on, right on the nose, that there's a form of selfishness going on. Like, someone, you think, I can get something out of this. Someone else. Good chance to think. All right, any other hands? Give me an example. Excellent example. Thank you. All right. Other thoughts? Someone says, yes, Sash. I'm summarizing and saying that partiality assumes the worst in other people. You look at that situation, you judge, you make a judgment on that person, and the judgment is usually, if you're being partial, then you're judging in a negative way typically. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So the one thing that you kind of definitely mentioned, I think is worthy of mentioning, is that it's oftentimes very subtle. Like, the examples that James gives are really blatant, right? Someone walks into a service and like someone's really directing them. But sometimes, like you said about, you mentioning about, like in a work setting, sometimes it's just a little bit of, everyone just seems to know that the boss favors this one person. And you can't put your finger on why, you just know. And it just gets at you a little bit because you feel like you're working just as hard as the next guy, right? So I don't think this kind of thing is always blatant. Sometimes there's a subtle undertone that goes with it. I think that's a good point. Other people, other thoughts. Yes. Okay, actually, you lean exactly to what, or my notes, I left a blank there. And I said partiality is an act that contradicts the essence of the gospel. And that's what you're right on there, is that the essence of the gospel, obviously, is that God is impartial towards us. Because some of you were barely sinners at all. And came to know Jesus. And some of you were the worst of sinners. And some of you didn't even know what sin was until 5 minutes before someone introduced you to the concept. But you all needed a Savior. And God gave his grace to you in an unmerited fashion. You didn't earn it because you weren't favored based on anything. He simply loves all of us because we're all created in God's image. God created us to be loved by him and to love him back and to worship him, right? So at the end of the day, and interesting enough, if you think about it, the verse we're studying follows directly after James just got done telling us, be doers of the gospel. So you, in a sense, he is basically saying, and the first thing you can do is knock this off. Stop showing favoritism. Stop being partial towards others, because I, as God, was not that way with you. So he asks us to receive that grace, but part of it is being one who gives grace as well. See the connection between those two sections. And there's a lot of different ways we don't do that. And one thing I thought about, too, is that we think about how partiality sometimes is subtle and it's small. And think about, like, the Sermon on the Mount and the examples Jesus gave. And he's talking about things like murder. What do you say about murder? If you're even just thinking about that you hate your brother, you are a murderer according to the law. Now, there wasn't a Sermon on the Mount point that Jesus had, but think about that concept. What does it mean? Like, if you're thinking I'm going to show favoritism based on some random criteria that I have in my head, whether it's money or religion, or race, or some other factor, that you are, in essence, contradicting the gospel in that very moment when you do that. I think we came up with a very good list here to give us an idea of, like, why it is that partiality is a sin. And I think we can all hopefully come to an agreement on that. So that brings us to a next really valid question. I started answering it myself, but I think there's other ways that we can answer this. And that's this question. What do you think being the church, or even us in this room, what are our worst blind spots? In what ways are Christians committing the sin of partiality most egregiously in our culture? Or maybe a better way of saying this, a positive way of saying it, because I don't want you to necessarily think negative, is to say, where should we be focusing our attention to change, right? Because I don't want to just sit here and go, okay, we stink in this. Let's focus. I got a quick hand. Go.
Sexual identity.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one. One we're not going to touch this morning, but that is a big one. The reason, I'll be very upfront. There's a reason why there's some I won't touch this morning. That one is because I'm not going to touch that because there's a lot of complex theology that goes into it. Because it is a sin, but there's some other aspects that go into it. And there's a couple other ones in here that on my list that I wrote myself that I'm like, I'm not touching them because it's too complex to do in one class. In fact, actually all of them are too complex, but we're going to try. So I will say one thing. Like, obviously, we brought up money right now, wealth, right? I actually think that's a valid one. I think we all fall into that trap to a certain degree. But I actually think on the scale of where the church is and where we're probably at as people, that's actually probably a smaller issue than some of the other ones, like sexual identity. So anyways, go on. Give me some other, throw some other ideas at me about what are some ways that we as a church struggle with this concept and where we tend to be partial, show partiality.
People with tattoos,
sure. With our culture, I think. I mean, if we go to some Christian church in the middle of Chicago or something, maybe it was, they don't struggle with that. But I think in our context, fair statement.
Cleanliness.
That's a good one.
Do you want to touch that one today?
I bathed yesterday, so I'm good. People with addictions.
We assume, well, they can read their Bible and pray more and, you know, and be healed of it, and that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I think maybe a good question to ask as we're going through this list is, what is it that, what is the criteria? Like, when someone, when we see someone with an addiction, if we're struggling with being partial, what is it that we're thinking?
Well, I don't have that problem, so this is what I do. So
yeah. I don't have that problem. Why can't they just get over that?
Right.
That's honestly what it is. So.
If they would have just made better decisions,
yep.
They wouldn't be here.
Yep. And there's this times that all those things come before you even open a word to actually talk to that person, right? And how many people, like, for example, drugs is a good one, the addiction. How many people, opioid addiction is a big thing in our culture right now, right? How do people fall into that, though? It's not like they actually just said one day, you know what, I want to go do opioids to be addicted because that sounds like fun. Because no one does that, okay? What happened was they probably had an injury, a significant injury, and then they went to a doctor and they got drugs that were prescription drugs, which were okay, and they started using them to not feel so much pain as they're healing. But after they were healed, they still felt the need for the drug. And then it went beyond that. So if you think about it, that person didn't, their choice, I'm not trying to absolve them. Maybe be careful. But if when you hear the story about what happens, there's room for compassion to understand what happens. But when we don't hear the story and we just make a prejudgment, that's called like a prejudice and a bias. Okay, other forms. Shut this down.
I just want to ask, in this context, we're talking about people who are coming from the church or people who need Christ. Are you referring to us, our blind spots, like throughout the week? Like, if I'm in the workplace, I have these blind spots. Are we talking about who we allow to come into the church?
I think I'm a little bit of both. But I think actually I'm focusing more on our everyday lives. Because honestly, you know, we're here like 4 or 5 hours on a Sunday morning. I'd rather focus on the other many hours of the week of where we're at. But, I mean, we can bring up ones that we have in the church. That's fine.
Honey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a church we do that. We're less willing to play in the sandbox with somebody who has a different perspective.
Yeah, and that falls into a subtle category, right? Because ultimately we're thinking that's more aligned with what we think of favoritism. Like, the reality is, you know, there's just some people you like more than others. Some of you are like, I like Paul, he's cool. Others like, man, he's so weird. Okay? And you just keep your distance from me, and that's fine. We all... well, it's not fine according to this, is that favoritism is not a good thing. So everyone should be my friend, is what I'm saying. No. but that's like a subtle one, but it's an important one. But there's all obviously some of the ones we're bringing up are far more egregious as well. I think Saul over here first.
People whose life stories are so different from ours that we don't, A, know how to connect to them or B, know how to help them.
Mm. Excellent point. Good for a conclusion. We were talking about how do we deal with different people who come from a very different background, and gently, loving, and understanding, it's going to be a hot mess. Like, that's a well taken point there. Excellent point. And the one thing she's bringing up, something we're going to go to. I don't want to shut anyone down. Does anyone have other examples they want to give first? Daniel, I think you had your hand up. Go for it. Yes.
So we might, there's a way in which I should interact with people just because they're people. But there's a point at which this isn't about am I showing favoritism. This is about am I being a steward of my resources, or am I being a steward of God's holiness in a way that I should? So it doesn't mean that I just tell people, like, oh, you're fine where you are. Whatever you are, like, that's okay. I'm tolerant, right? So we don't, like, say to someone who has an addiction, like, oh, no, like, yeah, you just do your thing. Like, but that can't mean that I'm not going to interact with that person. I'm going to feel awkward around that person. I might not know how to interact with them. Subtle, and I might just prefer to, like, I don't know what to say, so I'm just not going to say anything. And that's the part that's wrong. If someone needs help, if someone needs something, if there's a way that we can have a conversation and let them, like, show them that show them the mercy of God, that's the partiality that we can't show.
I think Daniel's making an excellent point. We need to keep in mind is that. Despite what we were talking about, this concept of partiality, impartiality, that to a certain extent, God actually does want us to keep engaging our brain and make judgments. Like if you ever hear someone say, like, you shouldn't judge people. It's like, honestly, the Bible actually tells you to judge people. It just tells you to do it rightly. Okay? That Jesus says, Jesus is the source for that. Okay? He says, judge people rightly. He doesn't say, don't judge people. So if you ever hear someone say, Christians shouldn't be judging people, they're actually wrong. The Bible actually explicitly says you should be judging people, okay? But rightly. And one of the ways to be rightly is with grace and with love, with kindness. And maybe we would go with this, with giving, instead of assuming the worst in people, but giving people the benefit of the doubt. But once in a while, even when you give someone the benefit of the doubt, there are times where you're like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to approve of that.
And I think where this can really throw a wrench in things, too, Jay and I were talking about yesterday about just kind of discernment and how we have to wrestle with things. And
yeah. Okay.
And God might be saying, like, I told you to be generous with those in need. You're not even going to buy them food. Like, you could buy them food, and you're just thinking, like, oh, like, I need to be a good steward of my resources, so I'm not going to give them anything. And so now we've excused partiality, and we've called it, like, we've called it good judgment, good discernment.
Yes.
And that's where it really gets complicated, and where we have to just rely on, just relying on what I feel about this situation? Or am I really concerned with God's nature and God's character?
Just reiterate, I think what you're hitting on is that just because we know that God says we shouldn't be partial, doesn't make that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard, like case by case a little bit, about what wondering, like, is this a time when God's asking me to use my discernment and not trust, or what is God telling me to do? So I 100% agree with you that it's not as simple as saying, like, oh, we shouldn't show favoritism, and that's the end of the story. Like, there's a lot that's involved with interacting with people in our daily lives. So I agree. I think I did see a hand over here, correct? I get what you're saying. The hard thing is that we could easily feel like, I think we could easily fall into the trap where we use discernment as our excuse for showing favoritism. But at the same time, we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater kind of thing. We don't want to throw out discernment. We still want to use it, but we got to be careful that we're not using it as an excuse rather than as a God-given, something he wants us to do. So, yes. Andrew.
Part of what we're getting at here, simplifying it properly, is that love does not always equal trust.
Mm.
And Jesus showed love to everyone, but he didn't trust everyone. And as you said, he talked about judging and judging rightly. And I think about, in all of this, we're talking about different groups of people and the types of people that have lives that are very different than ours, people who maybe we've never
So I think one subtle difference between some of these circumstances is that oftentimes when it comes to something like partiality and prejudice, maybe another word for it, that makes it different than discernment is oftentimes what the key difference is that the judgment you're making is based solely on some external criteria. And you haven't had any relationship at all. You haven't delved into what's going on. Like I think of the story you were just sharing. You had a little bit of relationship. You had a little ability to make some judgment because you actually tried to connect with these people. So that's a place where I think discernment fell into place. But if they had just came into the church and looked like a bunch of schleps, and you just instantly said, I don't want to deal with these people, that's a wholly different thing, right? I think that's what we're getting at. And I even think of what Anna Jane was just sharing. Like, I don't think she said, she walked in a room and said, I would never leave my kids with them. Like, the implication was, you got a chance to get to know them, and then after getting to know them, you're like, I don't think this is probably the best, Daniel.
Is that sometimes we are not trusting someone that we need to, and sometimes the really nice dressed person who walks in and we're sitting next to might be the one who's going to take advantage of you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, thinking about money, like I'm a credit manager. I'm well aware that the well-dressed person is oftentimes the one who's often going to lead me to a courtroom to have to get my money. And the guy who just looks like he just got out of his truck with a hat behind his head is the most honest guy who will pay every bill before it's due. So I see that in my working world all the time. Like you can easily fall into the trap of just believing someone because they're just dressed nice. I thought I saw another hand go up. Was there another hand this way? Okay. So one thing I think that God calls us to in this, as I already mentioned, we were talking about the very last verse of James. He talks about exposing that we should be helping one another, right? Not just, like James is trying to help us in this verse by exposing our blind spots. I think what he's trying to say at the end of the very book is, okay, I've exposed some blind spots, but one thing you guys should be doing for one another is also exposing blind spots. Because here's the thing about blind spots. We all have them, and you don't know you have them because they're blind spots, right? And sometimes, here's the thing, a lot of times what happens is someone introduces us to the idea that, like today, we're talking about partiality, we're talking about different topics, and you're like, you know what, maybe I do that. And then all of a sudden we feel like, I've settled out in my heart, I'm good. Like, me and God, we figured out. But I don't think it all works like that. I think a lot of times with sanctification, it comes down to more like, it comes down to you learning one thing at a time about yourself. And then you go, okay, I don't want to do that. And I wanted to actually try and give a real-world example. So I have a case study that we're, it's not really a case study, it's just a specific topic that I was almost surprised someone didn't bring up directly, and that's the concept of racism. Danny, I think you have the notes you could pass out to people then. I think it's fair to say, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's fair to say that in the church today, it's generally understood racism is bad, right? It doesn't seem to be something we really challenge anymore. We just assume it is, and we just assume, well, I've decided I'm not a racist, so that's the end of the story. I'm not going to judge someone based on their color. And I want to just challenge the notion that that's not necessarily true, that I think racism... And before I go on, I want to say something. I am by no means an expert on this topic. I've studied, I've read certain books about it. I've obviously read a little bit more in the past week or two about the topic, but I am by no means an expert. There's a lot of people who like literally spend their entire careers studying the topic and how we as a culture can become better. So I do not presume to be an expert. I do not presume that the notes you're receiving are all-inclusive of everything you could possibly understand about racism. And honestly, I share that to actually make my point, that the reality is I've learned a little bit about myself and where I fit in this spectrum. And one of the first things, I'm actually going to skip ahead, something I was going to share later, but here's the thing. If someone comes to you and says, you're being a racist right now, like, how do you feel in that moment? Defensive. Anyone else? Anyone would feel a little angry? Isn't it like calling someone a name? You know, fill in the word expletive, but just, you're a bleep, right? Isn't that how it feels if someone says you're a racist? And I want to challenge the notion that the reality is that most people, well, some people will say that because they are just trying to be mean to you. Like, they didn't like what you did, and they're trying to be mean. But there are some people who are on an academic level, they're trying, or they're your friend, they're actually saying to you to say, please stop doing that. Think about what you're doing. Like, I've known people who still in 2019 will walk around and use the word, excuse me, we use the word nigger, okay? If you're one of those people, please stop. You're being a racist. Like, seriously, black people would be really angry about being called that. Just like you would be angry if someone called you, fill in the blank, a-hole, okay? So with all loving kindness, please never use that word again. It has a lot of derogatory things. And if right now you feel a sense of, I feel defensive because, well, you just said that, and I just used that word 2 weeks ago, like, okay, that's what James is calling us to. Okay, he's calling us to actually have the grace, because here's the thing, me doing that, and there's someone in here who actually still uses that word, I just gave you grace, because I just gave you the opportunity to receive it and to obey it and know that God says, this is wrong and this is evil and we shouldn't be doing this to other people. So it's grace to confront someone. It's not grace to sit there and go, well, that person, they're from a different era and they just think differently. That's not grace, okay? So I wanted to share this with you, a little bit of research, to show you how there are actually subtle differences. There's multi-layers to this topic. It's not just, oh, racism is XYZ, and that's the end of it. So a couple things. A bias. A bias is something we think generally we know what that is. It's a conscious or unconscious prejudice against an individual or group based on their identity. And racial bias is just a belief about one of those groups, right? Racism is what happens when that belief translates into action. I'll give you an example here. A person might unconsciously or consciously believe that people of color are more likely to commit crime or be dangerous. That's a bias, right? When we assume that people from Mexico crossing our border are all criminals, we are showing our racism on our sleeve. Is it true that some of them do? Yeah. Duh, they're human beings just like us. They're equally sinners just like we are, okay? But when we make the assumption that they all are that way, you're just showing your racism at that point. A person might become anxious if they perceive a black person is angry, and that stems from a bias. And actually, I had to think about that one. I actually had to feel in my heart and say, you know, that's a little bit true for me. I've had friends who are black in the past, and it'd be that, but they're, for me, visually, like, if someone gets angry, it upsets me. But I have noticed in the past, if I've been around black guys who are angry, for some reason, it seems angrier than it does if a white person does. And I have to just admit, that's my sin, okay? Something I need to wrestle with and get over. Okay, and those biases could, as I said, could actually lead to any number of actions, ranging in severity, right? I'll give a couple examples here. A person crosses a street to simply avoid walking next to a group of young black men or Hispanic men, right? A person calls 911 to report the presence of a person of color who is otherwise behaving lawfully. Now, how many of you guys watch the show This Is Us? Have you ever seen that on TV? There's an episode right on the very first season where the old grandfather character, I mean, he's old. I mean, he might be able to steal something out of your pocket, but he's not going to get 4 feet away from you because he was old. And he moved in with his son, who is affluent and rich, right? And he's poor, and he was into drugs at one point in his life, so he kind of just looks rough. Like, and he decided to do what he always does. He was just taking walks in the morning around the town. And one of the neighbors actually called the cops. I don't remember if it was a TV show, but I think it's a reflection of real life. One of the neighbors called the cops and pulled this guy over. What was he doing? He literally was taking a walk. He did nothing else. Would anyone have done that if he was white? The answer is really obvious. No. They may have if the white person who was dressed as a hobo, because it was supposed to be a rich neighbor in the story, right? So once again, prejudice, partiality is not limited to race, but that's what we're talking about in this moment. Systemic racism is a word, honestly, this is one of the words that's been used in the last 10 years that honestly I had to go, what is that? I don't know about you guys. If you hear things like that on the news, you're like, what in the world is that? Okay, well, I actually found a definition, so hopefully it's helpful. It says systemic racism happens when societal power structures, in other words, schools, businesses, or governments, perpetrate a racial bias, whether consciously or not. Honestly, that one, you can really dig deep into that. There's a lot of real subtle things that go into that. Like the one thing I read, I said, that sounds so goofy that someone would consider that racist, but yeah, I'm not the one who's on the outs there. And they said, when you go to the grocery store, there's an aisle for hair products. And then there's a small section called ethnic care. And I was like, well, wait a minute. Why doesn't that aisle say white people hair products and then everyone else's hair? Because there's an assumption, there's a subtle assumption that people are making that we're actually appealing to the general market of people who have more money, more wealth, and a certain thing. And the funny thing is these people don't even necessarily know they're holding that. That's actually the whole idea of systemic racism, is that people actually just start behaving this way just because they've always behaved this way, not because they actually are consciously having partiality towards these people. It's actually become an unconscious cultural thing for them. Okay, here is the next word that I think actually gives an emotional reaction to most people, and that is the word white privilege. If I thought systemic racism was hard to understand, this one was even harder. And honestly, when I first heard it, I had the very reaction that I read about that they said, that it's like, that's kind of offensive. Like that sounds, isn't that just a racist comment itself? And as I did some reading, I realized what they're actually trying to get at one article I was reading said the best thing to do is explain what it is not, because what it is not is what most people assume it is. And that is that white privilege is not the suggestion that white people have never struggled. All right? We've all, it's not the people who are bringing up this term are not trying to say we've never struggled. That's not their point. And it's also that it's not the assumption that everything a white person has accomplished is unearned. Because you hear that word, white privilege, it sounds like, well, that means all white people, they all have more money and wealth and more control and power. That's because they didn't earn any of that. That's not the assumption at all. It's just simply that there's a built-in advantage that separates people's levels of income. It kind of goes in tandem with the idea of systemic racism, in a way. You're benefiting in ways you don't even understand, and you just accept it. And you don't even realize that. It kind of goes with the whole idea of, it's just a mathematical truth that more black guys get pulled over by the cops than white people. And the reason is really simple. It's because partiality is being shown here. So I don't bring all this up. I bring this up for the purpose of showing how there's different levels to partiality. And then not even just this topic, and almost every topic we could bring up. I think the great example that Lindsay brought up earlier is talking about homosexuality, how the church deals with the homosexual community. Oh my, I would probably have to have a 10-page paper that's talking about the different ways the church deals with the many layers of that, hence why I didn't even try and touch that. I just want to challenge all of us to wrestle with this, okay, and say, Where am I at on this spectrum right now in my life? And what is God exposing to me, maybe even right now, that I need to repent of and change in my life? And I had a question here. And I had said, as Christians, we must think and feel deeply, not just what of the Bible, but the why. If racism is so bad, why is it so bad? And I'm going to actually short-circuit that question and say, we can give a couple more. But honestly, we already answered the question, guys. I decide based on the criteria that this person's of a different color. We are all created in God's image. So that means the Hispanic person, they're equally God's image. We're all more alike than we are different. We're all sinners, too. So we're all in the same boat in that regard, too. And a lot of it's fear-based. And what is almost the very basis of partiality? I think Ashley brought it up. Is that ultimately partiality is just assuming the worst in people. That's what it is. That's the bottom line. It's assuming, based on whatever criteria I chose, that person is dangerous or a loser or whatever, based simply on something I'm seeing on the outside of them. And that is why we go back to the beginning where you say partiality contradicts the essence of the gospel, right? So I challenge you to simply say, I don't think we have time to answer the last question yet. We certainly don't. But it'd be a great question for you to think about. What should we be doing as individuals and churches? And this is what I want to challenge you. It's not simply saying, let's think about racism. It's not simply saying, I'm just not going to be a racist. And that's the solution. Because here's the truth. The reality is you're going to be exposed to people, and you're probably already exposed to people who are racist on some level. And a lot of times I see it in my own life, and I see it in other people. Sometimes we go, well, okay, I don't like that, but I'm going to move on. But is that what Jesus would have done? Just said, well, I'm not a racist. It's okay if everyone else, these three people are. I would say no. Let's get back to James 5. It is grace to expose people's blind spots. So to simply accept it when you see it and just move on, you are not acting the way Jesus would act in that moment. If you were full of Jesus, you would stand up and say, I'm sorry, I can't agree with that statement you just made about Hispanics or whatever. I just can't. Like, that's just not right. You actually take the risk. It's a risk, right? Just stand up among your own tribe, whether it's your coworkers or just people at church, and say, guys, like, we're out of line here. So I challenge you all to take that risk and not simply just change your own heart. Because I think, and especially with this topic, I feel like a lot of us feel like we already did. In our heart, we feel like, well, I'm not a racist, and that's all that matters. But I say it's bigger than that. I thank you, and let's just end in a word of prayer. Jesus, I think my most basic prayer today is something I probably said like 4 or 5 times today. Expose our blind spots to us. Where is it that we're in our own hearts showing favoritism or partiality to others? And what is it that you're asking of us to change? Lord, give us the courage to act and to stand up for your kingdom and for your grace. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.